Hallo.
Hallo.
Good morning.
Hallo.
Hallo.
Hi.
Wow.
Hallo. Hallo. Hi, this is Bettina.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Venerable Phil.
My screen is filling up with pictures or question marks in some cases.
Yeah, a few people are excused. We are here in Munich with Mike and Erwin together.
Uh-huh. Wow. That's really amazing. Okay. As I clear my throat, one of the disadvantages of not having anybody around is when you wake up, you don't talk. And then when you do, it doesn't work.
Wenn der Rebbe Phil sagt, er ist gerade aufgewacht und hat bisher noch nichts gesprochen, deswegen muss er jetzt das mal sein, ja, sich räuspern.
Okay, are we ready?
Sind alle fertig?
Yes. I'm gonna mute my microphone now.
Okay. So, this course is called The Proof of Future Lives, and it's actually an introduction to Buddhist logic. We're going to be talking about how you prove future lives, or don't prove future lives, as the case may be, through logic. And we're going to cover quite a few different topics that are important in Buddhism. Here's what we have, 10, maybe 11 classes to go through. And we're going to do two today since, I wasn't able to start last week.
May I ask one question? Does anybody need translation?
Oh.
No, I don't need.
So nobody needs translation? That's fine.
Dann gehe ich raus. Das ist nämlich, das halt alles.
Braucht irgendjemand Übersetzung auf in Deutsch?
Nein.
Okay, then we can go on.
Okay.
Nobody needs translation, so no translation needed. So maybe we leave it out.
If there are things that people don't understand in English, feel free to ask for a translation right then, okay?
Yeah.
The first class, which is the one we're going to be doing today, and the second class, we're going to be looking at some arguments for past and future lives. The texts regarding past and future lives came about through debates that Buddhists had with non-Buddhists, particularly a group called hedonists. This would be probably between the 1st and 4th or 5th centuries A.D. The hedonists, they're the guys that said, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die, something like that. The hedonists do not believe in cause and effect. Things just happen, and you can't say why. Nothing that you do has any effect. You don't experience results from anything that you do. So, of course, they didn't believe in past and future lives, or at least that anything that you might do would affect whether you had past or future lives. If there's no cause and effect, then there's really no cause for your life. It just sort of happened. So the Buddhists were debating the hedonists. And what they did was they came up with some proofs for past and future lives. And we're going to start to take a look at that today. The second class, which we're also going to do today, concerns other levels of reality, such as emptiness and karma. These other levels are realities that we cannot perceive with our senses, and we have to rely on logic and scriptural authority to begin to understand them. The third class talks about pramana, which is correct perception or valid perception. And that's a very big thing in Buddhism. And basically, we talk about pramana throughout all 15 Buddhist courses, particularly in course 13, which is the art of logic. And then in class 4 deals with who is it that has pramana? Who is it that has valid perception? And what is a valid perception to these people, these beings? Buddhas do have pramana. And we're going to start looking in class 4 at how Buddhas view the world. Then in class 5, we're going to take a deeper look at omniscience. Buddhas are omniscient, meaning they know everything. They perceive all of reality in a single moment. There are no restrictions as to space or to time. There's no past, present, and future boundaries in for an omniscient mind. Do they know past, present, and future? Yes, but they know everything at the same moment. And we'll talk about that. Class 6 deals with how the Buddha achieved omniscience. And that's important to us because, really, that's what we're trying to do, too. Class 7, 8, and 9 deal with actual proofs of past and future lives. And then class 10, we're going to look at how ignorance triggers our next life. In Buddhism, we've been going through life after life after life with no beginning. It's always been that way. And our lives are characterized by suffering. And we're going to take a particular look at why this cycle of lives is triggered by ignorance. And this material comes from the Wheel of Life. Which is it's not part of the 15 courses, but it's an interesting kind of byproduct. It's an interesting topic. It takes 3 or 4 days to teach. So the subject that we are studying is pramana. Pramana is Sanskrit. And valid perception is a good translation in English of pramana. This subject is one of the 5 great subjects that the monks study in monasteries. And every winter, the monks take 3 months off and they study pramana. Now, typically in a monastery, you'll study a text. The first one they study is, at least for the Geshe degree, is the Ornament of Realizations by Maitreya. And they'll study that for 8-9 years. And then they'll study Entering the Middle Way for 6-7 years. And then they'll study Abhidharma Kosha for 8 or 9 years, something like that. So they take one of these texts, there are 5 of them, and study them one after the other. But pramana, they do every year for about 3 months. Pramana is valid perception, but it is also the study of logic, you know, or how do we prove something. It's about reasoning. And the word itself means correct perception or unaffected perception. Perception that is not hindered by anything else. Perception that is not changed by anything else. In scripture, a classic example of something that is not a pramana is when you are in a boat floating down the river and it appears that the trees are moving, you know, rather than you moving downstream. But 99% of what we perceive during the day is pramana. We perceive things validly. We perceive things correctly. So pramanas are normal perceptions, and we have them all the time. So we're going to do some definitions now. Definitions are also very, very important in Buddhism. And when the monks began to study at around age 12, after they've done their basic, you know, learning how to read and count and things like that, they began to study the definitions of things. So we're going to talk about what are we perceiving? We're perceiving things that exist. So what is an existent? An existent is that which is perceived by a valid perception. So an existent is something you perceive with your valid perceptions. And you're having valid perceptions all day long. It's interesting, and we have to keep in mind, and those of you who've been studying for a while, you know, this is sort of second nature to you now. But things don't exist by themselves outside of us. Things exist when we perceive them. If we don't perceive them, they don't exist. And we have to add here, for us. Okay? So an existent is that which is perceived by valid perception. Now, these perceptions you have are, if they're valid, that means that they're not under the influence of alcohol or drugs. They're not under the influence of strong emotions like anger or jealousy or even love, for that matter. They're not under the influence of physical limitations. So if you want to prove that something exists, all you have to do is say, I see it. Or I hear it, you know, or I taste it, and so on. If you don't see something by pramana, it doesn't exist. And that's sort of the end of story about existence. Existence are things that you perceive validly. Now, physical limitations have to do... Well, if you're old like I am, your smeller, you know, sense of smell doesn't work very well, let alone hearing. But another thing that you can do, and which is in the classical texts, is you go outside at night and look at the moon, and then take a finger and press the side of one of your eyeballs, and you'll see two moons. So that's a physical limitation. There's something physically wrong with the senses at that point. Now, Kedrupje was one of Lord Buddha's two heart disciples, one of Lama Tsongkhapa's two heart disciples. And he said in one of his texts, that all you Tibetans who have taken refuge, you know, what is it that you've taken refuge in? Have you ever seen a Buddha? And one of the things that we take refuge in is the Buddhas, right? The three jewels, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. And if you're new to Buddhism right now, that's in course one. Have you ever heard a Buddha? You know, exactly what is it that you're taking refuge in if you have no pramana of a Buddha? Well, if you don't see or hear, you know, or touch a Buddha, then there's no Buddha for you. It seems like that's the case. You know, unless you really truly believe that His Holiness or your teacher is a Buddha, there is no Buddha in your experience. That's what he was telling the Tibetans. Well, then what do we do, you know? Since we can't see a Buddha, we have to prove the existence of a Buddha. Now that proof will not give us a direct pramana. In other words, direct would be something that we perceive with our senses. But it's awfully close to a direct pramana. If you tell someone, I believe that there are Buddhas, and they say, okay, prove it to me. You probably can't do that right now. If you can prove the existence of Buddhas to yourself, though, or the existence of past and future lives, you were probably better Buddhists for having been able to do that. And this would be true for any religious system, you know, in the world. If you can prove things to yourself, then you're a better practitioner of that particular religion. So why is it important to learn this topic of pramana or logic? You know, what we are learning has been passed down in an unbroken chain from Lord Buddha to us. At every juncture, you know, at every new teaching, there's been somebody who knew the topic that could pass it on to his or her students. And this chain has not been broken for 2,500 years. So we can't then be the ones to break it. You probably, some of you don't think you're going to be teachers, but you are. If you stick to the path, you must be teachers. You are going to have to pass down what you've learned to your students. But what you've learned, you have got to have a direct experience of somehow or other. And for things like emptiness and karma, you're not going to be able to see it or taste it or feel it or touch it or hear it or smell it or what's left. I think that's it. So you're going to have to prove it to yourself through logic. So you have to learn it so that you can pass it on. And that's why this topic is crucial to becoming a Buddha. You know, we will learn how to become a Buddha a little bit anyway in this course. But what we're going to be learning mainly is how do we prove things to ourselves that are not available to our senses. Reading something that Lord Buddha said, like on emptiness or the nature of reality, we can absorb that intellectually and probably repeat it to somebody and even tell it to our students. But if we don't understand it, we really cannot pass that knowledge on. So we have to be able to understand it. And then we want to understand it for ourselves too. Because when it comes to the point where you really start trying to get rid of your mental afflictions to reach nirvana and then get rid of the obstructions to omniscience so you can reach omniscience, you've got to use logic to do that. There's really no other way. So what is this unbroken chain that we're receiving? Now, as an aside here, the Sakya tradition of Tibetan Buddhism has at least had a very strong logic tradition. One of Sakya Pandita's main works was on logic. And that chain was broken a few centuries ago, and it no longer exists within the Sakya tradition. And the same thing happened in the Kagyu tradition for some reason. I don't know why. Geshe-la's taught Nyingtahuldas about it, and he doesn't really know why either. You know, Jetsam Kapa, you know, the crown scholar of Tibetan scholars, was a Kagyu. And they had a great scholarly tradition, a great debate tradition, and it just doesn't exist anymore. And there's the possibility then that the same thing might happen in the Gelugpa tradition, which is our tradition. Many of the great texts and logic never made it out of Tibet when the Chinese took over. Occasionally, we find one or two. So we have to try harder now to understand, you know, what has been passed down to us in this unbroken chain for 2,500 years. The text we're going to be studying is called Pramanavartika in Sanskrit. The English translation would be Commentary on Valid Perception. Pramana is valid perception. So this is the text used for the study of logic in all Tibetan monasteries. It was written in the 7th century AD. It was written by Master Dharmakirti, who lived in the early 7th century. He lived around 630 AD. The text is written from a Sautrantika viewpoint. even though it appears he was a Prasangika according to his other writings. Now, what's Sautrantika and what's Prasangika? In the Indian tradition, there were four different levels or four different schools of philosophical thought. Each one of those was taught by Lord Buddha. But when Lord Buddha taught people in front of him, he taught to their ability to understand things. So there are four levels. The lowest one is called Vaibhashika, sometimes called detailist. And then the next one is called Sautrantika, and that means followers of sutra. And it is this school of logic, this school of thinking about the world that the monks learn when they begin their studies around 12 years of age. The two lower schools are part of what we call the Hinayana tradition. Hinayana tradition is for people who want out of suffering. They're fed up. They say, no more, I want out. And their goal is nirvana, which is a solitary peace. They reach nirvana, the mental afflictions are gone. They will never again be reborn into the suffering world. And when they die, they enter a meditation on their own bliss, where they remain for the rest of eternity. Until somebody comes along, a Buddha, and sort of shakes their shoulder and say, come on, wake up, there's more to do. The Hinayana tradition is concerned with individual liberation, which in Sanskrit is pratamoksha, just for themselves. The third philosophical school in ancient India is Chittamatra, or mind only. And then the fourth one is a middle way school. And there are two divisions to middle way. There's the Swatantrikas, which sounds a lot like Sautrantika, but it's Swatantrika. And then there's the Prasangika. And Tibetan Buddhism mainly involves the Prasangika viewpoint. Now, the monks study all of these viewpoints from the time they're 12 until, you know, they get their degree. So they learn all philosophical schools. Lord Buddha taught all four philosophical schools. The only correct one, correct meaning, the only way you can reach omniscience, to reach Buddhahood, is through the Prasangika viewpoint. But you've got to learn the other ones to sort of step up, you know, to the Prasangika viewpoint. Now, does that mean you start at kindergarten? Well, it does. But probably you will understand at least the two lower schools, Sautrantika, very, very easily. They're not strange to us at all. If you've got the karma to hear teachings like this, then you've already been through these lower schools. And we'll be concentrating on mainly the middle way school. But here we're going to be talking about Sautrantika. Now, Sema, say to yourselves, Sema, three times. Sema.
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 Yeah, that's valid perception, Sema. And Master Dharmakirti was writing about what is not a valid perception in your mind. Now, he was doing a commentary on another book on valid perception called The Compendium of Valid Perception, which was written by Master Dignaga. Master Dignaga lived around 440 AD. The compendium is a collection of teachings on logic by Lord Buddha. And that's why we have the word compendium in the title, which in English means sort of like a collection, a bringing together of various things in a book. Now, we know very little about either Master Dharmakirti or Master Dignaga. And even their dates are in question. We're not sure. Around this time, dates were given with relationship to a king or something like that, in the time of King so-and-so. And those dates really aren't there either. But through scholastic work, we've sort of gotten the timeline of when this king lived and that king and that king. And we've also gotten kind of a timeline of when a particular writer lived and then another writer and then their students and so on and so forth. But we're really not sure about these times. So Master Dharmakirti is explaining Master Dignaga's book. And he does that because there were some attacks by non-Buddhists on the compendium. And Master Dharmakirti is setting the record straight in his text, the commentary on valid perception. The commentary is on Master Dignaga's book. So Master Dignaga is the source. He's like the father of all systems of Buddhist logic. And all other writings on logic are basically commentaries on the compendium, which is Master Dignaga's book. So we're going to be using the commentary on Master Dharmakirti's commentary called Lamp on the Path to Freedom. This was written by Gyaltsep J. Dharmarinchen. We do know his dates. They're 1362 to 1432. And he was one of Jeitson Kapa's two main disciples. When Jeitson Kapa's pictured with his two disciples, Gyaltsep J. is always on Jeitson Kapa's right. Gyaltsep means regent, and he's called that because he took over the throne of Jeitson Kapa when Jeitson Kapa died. Jeitson Kapa wrote something like 10,000 pages of commentary on every major text in the Sanskrit collection of texts called the Tengyur. Gyaltsep J's mind was so deep that monks typically spend a week on a single paragraph of his works, and they debate them for that week. They're trying to get at the depth of Gyaltsep J's understanding of his topics. So in order to understand Gyaltsep J's commentary, we have another one called Jewel of the True Thought. And this was written by Geshe Yeshe Wangchuk, who was born in 1928. Geshe Wangchuk is a Tibetan scholar who never left Tibet. He's brilliant. He wrote this book twice. The first one was burned during the Cultural Revolution. So he wrote it again. And his student was Ken Rinpoche, who passed these teachings on to Geshe Michael Roach, who passed them on to us. So what do we have? We have a root text by Master Dignaga. We have a commentary on that by Master Dharmakirti. We have a commentary on that written, 800 years later by Gyaltsep J. Dharmarinchen. And then we have a commentary on Gyaltsep J.'s commentary by Geshe Yeshe Wangchuk, written in the 20th century. So, mainly we're going to be reading selections from Geshe Wangchuk's commentary, but there will be other commentaries as well. So these texts and these writers are more important to us than our grandparents. Why? Because understanding them will allow us to really understand the teachings that we do receive that tell us how to reach enlightenment. Our grandparents gave us our bodies, right? But these writers are showing us the path out of samsara. So we should know them and their texts and know the order in which they occur. Now, there are several such lineages that monks must know in the monastery. For example, monks are expected to know each and every debate ground master from the founding of the monastery that they're in up to the present day. And each Tuesday, at the beginning of a debate, or at the middle of a debate, the debate stops. The debate master on the ground says, okay, stop. And the monks pray for 3 hours, thanking these masters, the masters in that monastery that have passed down the debate tradition. And debate tradition includes logic, obviously. It basically is logic. So, and then there are also, you know, kids' books that are for the young monks that they use in their early study of logic. These books are often called dura, and they're just collections of definitions and very basic understandings. And part of this is beginning logic as well. So dura means collected topics, and it's the beginning textbook for the study of valid perception. Now, the dura contains about somewhere between 15 and 20 subjects. It's going to be the main text that we use in Course 13, which is the Art of Reasoning. Not Class 13, but Course 13. So three of these topics are found in the dura. The first one is called sensun. This is how we define something. The topic of sensun contains definitions, including the definition of his definition, and the rules we use for defining things. We need to know this in order to maintain clarity in both debate and in our teachings. You know, what is calm abiding exactly? Calm abiding is the ninth level of meditation. What is it, you know? How do we know that we're there? We don't know that we're there unless we have a very clear understanding of it. And one of the ways we get that is we start with a definition and then debate it. What is omniscience exactly? These dura, these sort of kids' books, are where the monks learn these things. You know, it's where they learn how to define things. And we started off this class with a definition. The definition of an existent is that which is known by valid perception. And the definitions are usually sort of that simple. So sensun, you know, how you define something is the first of the three topics that we're talking about here. The second is shidrup, and this is an outline of existing things. It's a complete breakdown of all existence, and it occupies about 400 pages in the Abhidharma, or these very basic teachings. Abhidharma sort of means knowledge. And then the third topic is chi chedrak. Now, this is a study of quality and characteristics, or classes and subclasses, or general and specific. Those three pairs are saying the same thing, basically. It's the study of how we make mental images. So the careful study of this subject can lead you to a direct perception of emptiness. And then there's a subject, it's sort of beyond the collected topics thing, called formal logic and reasoning. And this is about how to make a reason. For example, this happens because of that. And that is the reason. Sound is impermanent because it is produced. It is a formal statement of logic, and because it is produced is the reason there. You have to master this topic before you are allowed to enter the debate ground. Now, monks typically aren't allowed on the debate ground until they're 15 years old. They start studying when they're 12 or 13, studying logic and definitions and everything. So it takes them a while to get to the point where they're laid on, allowed on the debate ground. The study of logic and perception, according to the Middle Way School, is the key to seeing emptiness directly, which leads you to nirvana and to enlightenment. So the readings from the class that you have in your notebook contain a quote from Lord Buddha on why you need logic. In this quote, Lord Buddha says that unless you are a person like me, you cannot judge another person, or else you will fall, is the word he uses. Sometimes that's translated as fail, but it's fall. Where do you fall? Into the hell realms. In the whole sutra, he tells a story about himself as a in a former life where he was a monk and criticized another monk. And he spent 500 rebirths as an animal, finally winding up in the hell realms as he went down. So he said, don't do that. You never know who is a bodhisattva or a Buddha around you. And if you say bad things about them, you accumulate loads of negative karma, which is the thing that leads you to the lower realms. And the story he told, he was a monk who was jealous of another monk's learning and said bad things about him. And his next rebirth was a monk in the animal realms and eventually down to the hell realms. And then Lord Buddha says that that monk was himself in an earlier life. And then he goes on to explain how one studies logic to understand things that are hidden to us. And this is where Buddhist logic comes from. Almost everything that is important that we need to know are things that we cannot perceive with our senses. So, you know, we can perceive food, for example. We can perceive other people and so on. We know how to run our car. These are all things that we can perceive. But we cannot perceive the true nature of things with our senses, because the true nature of things is that they have no nature. It's a lack, and you can't perceive a lack of something with your senses. So the purpose of logic, basically, is to keep us out of the hell realms, out of the lower realms, you know, and then to move on to nirvana and enlightenment. And then there are two readings you have for this class, and the second one is a short biography of Geshe Wangchuk that was written by a monk at Saramay in India. And that's good there. As I said, Geshe Wangchuk taught Ken Rinpoche logic. And when Ken Rinpoche was still in Tibet. So we now have a direct link. You through me, through Geshe-la, through Ken Rinpoche, to Geshe Wangchuk. So that's the end of class one. And before we begin class two, if there are any questions, I can answer them, hopefully.
I have a question.
Yes.
This is Christian from Berlin. You said, you quoted Buddha saying something to fall. I mean, if you judge on somebody, you fall. And then you added, you fall into the hell grounds. Like, has he said that too?
Yes.
Okay.
And the he was himself, former life.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Great sharing so far. Thank you.
The really important part surrounding that teaching is, especially as we get further on in our Buddhist practice, that we have to begin seeing everybody else as Buddhas, as high beings, and everything around us is pure. And normally in everyday life, we go through and, you know, somebody cuts us off in traffic and we get angry and say bad things about them. You know, what a jerk or something like that. You know, it happens all the time. We're always judging people. I mean, even good things. But the thing is, we don't know about these people. We cannot read their minds, or at least we cannot yet read their minds. We don't know what's going on. And usually when we judge somebody, it's in a negative way. And those judgments create bad karma for us. And the result of that bad karma is rebirth in a lower realm. And if we're really angry at somebody, you know, we call somebody a jerk or worse. That plants very bad karmic seeds for us. And that, over a lifetime, can send us to the hell realms, next rebirth, which we haven't proven yet, but will. Anybody else? Okay.